This might not be much of a shock to you, or maybe it will be, but between everyone I know who have talked to anyway about it, who have Game Center, they have said that you are like the number one person for the most amount of games, like at 79 or so.
And I do.
The next person's like 36.
Yeah, but that next person at 36 has more points, more achievements than I do. But yeah, it's true. I have over 1,000 games.
Wow.
I've fallen victim to commercialism once again.
Oh dear!
But it's not my fault,
isn't it?
It was a really, really talented salesperson.
I see.
I bought something that I didn't really need, and I didn't really have a use for. But like, I was seduced into it. Maybe seduced is the wrong word, as it was a kind of a balding middle-aged man. But
oh,
but like he listen he. He was tricky about it. Okay? So
okay.
I'm going to the SoftBank store. SoftBank is one of the three big cell phone providers in Japan. They were known as J-Phone back in the day.
Ah, yes, I think I have a J-Phone phone.
They were the only carrier to have the iPhone until like 2 months ago when AU finally got it too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get the new iPhone 4S. It looked very nice, but I still had, I don't know, like 5-6 months left on my contract. And I was thinking, you know, maybe when this one ends, I'll switch carriers because the signal strength is not wonderful for that carrier. The old carrier I used was better.
Okay.
But SoftBank was very smart. They sent me an email and they said if you switch to the iPhone 4S right now, we'll pay the remainder of your contract.
Oh,
and switch you that day to a new shiny Siri enabled phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, okay.
Nice.
But they got me. They got me while I was in. They had an in-store deal. And it was like if you when you were getting your new phone and only on that day you could get like a $200 discount on on the iPad.
Oh dear! Let's see where this is going.
I tried to call my wife to make her dissuade me, but you know she didn't pick up the phone, and I saw that kind of like permission.
Mm-hmm.
No. You know, I told myself ever since the thing came out that I don't need this. It's just a big iPhone.
Right. I had the same thought.
I've already got an iPhone and I've already got a laptop computer, you know. I don't really have any use for this in-between device. But like every time I'd see an ad for it, I'd be like, "Oh, I want this." And then I'd talk myself out of it. I'd always talk myself out of it because I'm like, "You want this, but you certainly don't need this."
Naturally.
But anyway, back to this cunning salesperson. He told me about this offer, and then he said the line that he must have been trained to say. He looked at me and he said, "Do you want an iPad?"
Oh, clever.
Yeah, I know. And I said, "Dear God, yes." Because it wasn't like, "Do you need an iPad?" Because that's the question I'd always been able to get out of. Whenever sure. he said, "Do you?" Whenever anybody was like, "Do you need an iPad?" Because I don't need an iPad. But he went, "Do you want an iPad?" And I'm like, "Yes, I want an iPad. Of course, I want an iPad." And because of this, there's a very nice little payment plan. So now, out of my cell phone bill that I get, about $20 is taken out extra a month for like 2 years.
Wow, that's not bad.
And I've got a 64 gig 3G iPad. And, and I get 100 free megs of cellular connection every month, but I don't think I'm going to use them. Because what's 100 megs of connection? That's like 3 YouTube videos. I mean, that's only enough internet to watch all of season 2 that we've made so far.
Don't tell anyone that.
Sorry. Oh, a little dig there. No. There's, but I'll just use it for Wi-Fi mostly. But anyway, so I'm in possession of an iPad.
Yes.
And it got me thinking about touchscreen devices in general, because one of the reasons I was kind of avoiding getting an iPad is I didn't want a redundant device, because as we talked about in our podcast earlier, I always buy Nintendo hardware eventually, and I'll get a Wii U. So
wait, redundant to the Wii U, you're saying, or?
Well, let's see. So how much do you know about touchscreens?
I know that the Wii U's touchscreen isn't as good as an iPhone's, and that's about it. Like it can't do multi-touch, and it's like the DS's touchscreen, basically, on the Wii U.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I know about it.
Okay. Should we go through a little bit of the history of touchscreens?
Sure.
All right. Did you ever use a touchscreen when you were in school? Did any of the computers you had use it?
I don't think so. I'm trying to remember. Touch screens, I don't feel like really came into use until like prominent public use until, like, you know, those like self-use credit card swipers.
Ah, yeah, or like museum kiosks or something.
Yeah, so I want to say like late 90s maybe.
Okay.
That's when I got used to them, like in everyday use.
I think I mentioned in a previous podcast, but my mother is a special education teacher. She always had a lot of this assistive technology stuff, and touchscreens were one of those, you know, great assistive technology things, because, you know, for someone who can't read, or, you know, has trouble using a keyboard or something, just to be able to touch the screen can be quite good. But these early touchscreens were very interesting. They were like these overlays you'd put over a monitor. I think we talked about this, didn't
we? Yeah, I think so.
And, you know, they were very inaccurate, imprecise, and you had to push them pretty hard, actually, to get anything to register. Gosh, maybe I'm going to be dating myself here, but do you remember the Newton?
I do. I remember the Newton because, as a fan of Star Trek, I thought it was the coolest thing ever that such a thing could exist 300 years ahead of its time. Or was it more like 400? Because, yeah, Next Generation would be the 24th century. So, yeah, the pads, that's pad with two Ds, was like the handheld device of choice for the you know, the 24th century Star Trek universe. And just the idea that something like that could exist in my lifetime was more than my, like, 10-year-old self could bear. Or was it, like, 9-year-old? I don't remember exactly.
I was 91, I think.
Okay, so I was like 10 then.
Definitely a neat idea. I remember that they had, you could get an optional, like, modem that would go on a cellular network, which, again, was pretty science fiction-y.
Weren't cell phones like as big as your head back then?
Yeah. This modem was like a box about as big as the Newton, I think.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know. I haven't seen one. In fact, most people with a Newton didn't use it for any telecommunications at all. It was mostly like a personal organizer.
Right.
Okay. We should probably explain what a Newton was.
Yes.
A Newton was made by Apple. Apple Newton. You know, kind of like fake Newtons.
Yes. Because the apple fell on Newton's head.
Yeah.
Or not on his head. Yeah. Is it his head, or did it just fall? I don't remember.
I don't know. I wonder if any of that actually happened. But anyway, this was, as we mentioned in our Apple podcast, during the time Steve Jobs wasn't looking, Apple decided to release some weird stuff, like one of the first digital cameras. And,
oh, wow.
You know, all kinds of out there, really kind of ahead of its time sort of stuff, but terribly, terribly unmarketable.
Sure.
But this was basically a personal assistant. It had a touch pen, a black and white screen. It was the first ones were quite large. They weighed a few pounds, I think. And they were portable, but you need cargo pants for them to really be called a pocket computer. I mean, they were pocket in the same way that the original Game Boy was a pocket device, you know. Like,
right.
If you had large jean pockets, you could theoretically put it in there, but you wouldn't want to, you know.
Right. Or would you? Is that a Game Boy in your pocket, or are you just happy to play Tetris in your pants?
Yeah, I think that probably wasn't one of the slogans they used at the time.
They should have.
Yeah, I'm sure sales would have gone through the roof. I saw one of these once. Only once, though. They weren't that popular.
Mm-hmm.
I saw someone using one once, and I was pretty amazed because it could recognize handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we show that classic Simpsons clip where it's Nelson the bully is taking a memo on his Newton.
What?
Did you see this episode? Yes.
I probably wouldn't have realized it was a Newton. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But he says, take a memo on your Newton or whatever. It was like for beat up Milhouse, but of course it didn't recognize his handwriting, right? And it said like eat up Milhouse.
Oh no.
Or something like that. I'm sure we can find this clip. But
oh goodness.
How many people get that? But it was like that. Your handwriting had to be pretty precise for it to pick up.
Yeah.
That's why when the next iteration of personal assistants came out, the Palm computers, they did away with handwriting recognition.
Yeah.
And made a new system called Graffiti. I'll get into that in a second, but the Newton. Getting back to this, the ability to send I believe you could send a fax as well from this thing via a wireless connection. But they used the most amazing marketing line I've ever heard in my life. It said, "And now you can send a fax to someone from on top of a Ferris wheel." And for some reason, that worked to me as a kid. I'm like,
fax.
You could send a fax from on top of a Ferris wheel. I'm like, no wires could possibly be on a Ferris wheel.
Right.
Whatever. But I thought at the time, I'm like, whoa, high tech. This is amazing. But now my adult person goes, what was that marketing all about? Who on earth would need to send a fax? From the top of a Ferris wheel. I mean, okay. Oh, man, I have to get this work done. Well, then why are you at the amusement park? You know, I mean?
Well, I mean, you know, nowadays people text in all kinds of inappropriate situations, like on the can,
yeah.
Post-coitus, during coitus.
Yeah. You won't believe what's going on during this podcast. But
hi-yo!
But, yeah, the Newton was, I don't know, they made several versions of them. They got smaller and smaller. And the Newton lingered for, I don't know, 6-7 years or something until Steve Jobs came back and he's like, what were you guys doing while I was away? Cancel that. The world's not ready for it yet.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much
the
sure.
World, yeah, Steve Jobs must have been like, who wants a portable device for internet and stuff? Yeah. And then he, like in the back of his head, he's like, wait for it. iPhone. Okay. Sorry. So then the Palm came, and it was a lot. It was really a much, much simpler device than the Newton. The Newton was really quite advanced. You know, lots of desktop publishing applications, things like that. The Palm came out, and it was just like, I'm small. I am a personal assistant. I don't do faxes from Ferris wheels.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you when it's your boss's birthday, and I will take memos for you.
Mm.
Did you have a personal digital assistant, a PDA?
No, I mean I thought having one would be neat again because of the Star Trek affiliation, but I mean by the time I was like really old enough to like want or need one, they weren't really commercially available as much anymore. I guess BlackBerry must have been out by then, but I didn't even get a cell phone until like 2003.
Mm.
So, the aforementioned Vodafone J-phone thing that I got while I was in Nagasaki, and then I came back to the States and then got a Sprint. cell phone. Had that for quite a while until I just recently switched to Verizon once it carried the iPhone. So,
well, yeah, there you go.
But at the time, I think the closest I ever got was like coveting some organization game, quote unquote, for the original Game Boy, which I thought was like the coolest thing. So, you know, like there's like trip planners, you know, notes, like it could do all these different kinds of things that are like par for the course now.
Oh, it had like a keyboard, didn't it?
I don't remember.
I remember reading about that in Nintendo Power.
Yeah, that's why I want it, because it was Nintendo Power. So,
I saw that. That was a bad idea.
Yeah.
I mean, because adding a keyboard to your Game Boy, I mean, already a businessman pulling a Game Boy out of his suit pocket's not going to do so well, but.
Right.
But yeah, I did want one as a kid. I don't know why.
I don't know why either, come to think of it.
To organize.
It just seemed so neat because it's like I saw a future where that could be useful, I suppose. And, you know, there wasn't any internet at the time to speak of for it to use, and it certainly wasn't enabled to go online were such a thing to exist at the time. So, you know, it was completely offline. You had to switch cartridges, of course, if you wanted to do anything else. It just kind of highlights to me how like important cheap rewritable solid state storage was to devices of all kinds, really, and how long it took for that to be cost effective.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Palm had almost no storage whatsoever.
Mm.
I mean, I think its storage was measured in, you know, megabytes. You know, it was like 2 megabytes, I think, was the original. It was storage. And it was like and it was expandable with like a cartridge or something on top to expand to 4 megabytes. It was, you know, but it didn't need much. It just stored your memos and stuff. And I mean, it had apps. Yes, you could. I mean, I had like Tetris and Solitaire and things like that. Oh, yeah. I owned 3 different Palm devices during the time. I had a Palm compatible, first of all. It was a handset, I think, handmark, something like that. and then I had one of the first color Palms. And then I had a Palm Tungsten, which was one of the last ones before they went only to making cell phone stuff.
Right.
And I love them. They were great little devices, and each one was leaps and bounds ahead of its predecessor. And I played some very interesting games on them. And
really?
I think that's what we're gonna take it to now is the gaming stuff.
Okay.
Oh, one game that I played on Palm that I've recently rediscovered is one called Warfare Incorporated.
What?
It was basically like Command and Conquer, or, you know, it was a real-time strategy game. And I don't know if there was anything that it did better than any of the PC ones. Probably not. It was probably worse. But the way you could control it by, like, just circling a group of troops and saying, go this way.
Mm-hmm.
Because it used the stylus for all the controls, you know.
Interesting.
So being able to just, like, you know, throw a bunch of, you know, it was just a way faster way than using the mouse. Because I've been playing Warcraft at that time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that the touchscreen was a fast and fun way of doing things. They released Warfare Incorporated for the iPhone, and I think I bought it like a couple months ago for like 99 cents.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time it was a Palm game, it was $24.99.
Wow.
But that's that's the thing. They were selling apps as real software. Like you could go to the store and get an app in a box that had like an install disk and like a password you typed. It was weird, but everybody pirated the apps.
Well, naturally.
I mean, except me. I don't do that. Mm. But I don't actually. I have a very guilty conscience. Mm. But I mean, there were some interesting games on, but the memory limitations and stuff like that and the fact that so few people actually own these devices for any of the big companies to be interested at all. I don't know. They didn't really go anywhere. Palm actually tried to release a handheld. Did you know?
Really?
Tapware Zodiac. I think it had a dozen games. They've tried to release touchscreen handheld devices. Can you think of one? Pre-DS. Yeah.
I guess I didn't know that the Palm wasn't a touchscreen device.
Oh, it was. Sorry, I mean a touchscreen gaming device.
Oh, like gaming focused? I don't know.
Yeah. A company called Tiger, who is famous for
LCD yes. games.
Do you know where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I think so.
It was the game.com.
Right. Oh dear.
And it was a black and white system, and it was to compete on the low end because it was like $50, I think.
Oh yeah, super low end. I mean, it was so low, and it's like, you know, I like the idea that they're going for here, but like Tiger was just synonymous with poor quality in my mind. So
yeah. The system was interesting. It had two cartridge slots, the original one, so you could have two games with you at any time, and they had. I'm going to say some of the games that were on this system, and you're going to call me out on this, but I guarantee you that these were actual titles on the system. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. We had Sonic the Hedgehog.
Really?
We had Duke Nukem 3D.
What?
Okay. Fighters Megamix, which was Virtua Fighter and Fighting Vipers. And okay, just wait for it. Resident Evil.
No, this can't have been any good.
I'm not kidding. We should probably put up some YouTube videos of these games in action so people don't think that I'm making this up. But yeah, okay. Tiger went really hard to recruit the best franchises. They wanted, but they may have lost a little bit in the porting.
I would assume so, yes.
They may have lost a bit, but it was a touchscreen device, and it had a little personal organizer thing built into it. The resolution was bad, so like you often had to like wiggle the stylus around for it to register the letters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it couldn't recognize handwriting or anything. You just had like an on-screen keyboard.
Oh, okay.
It was called a game.com because you could hook a modem to it and you could go on, you could do your email.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, we're not talking LAN or talking dial up.
Mm.
And it had no graphics to speak of. So it connected to a series called Delphi. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Which I was a subscriber to actually back in my Apple II days. Yes, I used the internet before the web. But
hold on, let me put up CompuServe for a second here so I can talk to my friends in the BBS.
All right, I'll fire up Genie or Prodigy and see. Okay, hold on. Prodigy's loading.
Yep, yep. I gotta use Netscape.
Still loading. Netscape. Pfft. Wow, That's pretty high tech. I'm still using Mosaic here.
Oh God.
I wonder if anybody got most of that. If you didn't, that's because
we're old and really, use the internet.
Really, don't even bother to look up what we just were talking about because we'd tell you if it was important and it's not. So.
Oh dear.
But if you did get that, well, hats off. But yeah, that used a touchscreen, and here's one that I just learned about today. They were going to make a successor to the Game Gear.
No.
Which used a touchscreen, yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah. It's saying Game Gear successor.
Did it use 12 batteries or something? Or
yeah, just for the touchscreen, interestingly. And then another 24 to run the games. Sega thought it'd be a good idea to put a popcorn machine on it, but it just didn't turn out to be, you know, good for power consumption. I don't know. God, I love Sega so much, but some of their hardware decisions were just like, what? Anyway,
I should mention too. This was kind of a frustrating point for those of us who like were really into the Game Boy and such. That they were claiming for the longest time they would never do a color system because it just wasn't commercially viable. And then of course, the counter advertising was, look, well, you know, Game Gear's got color, so what's your problem, Nintendo? You know, the problem was Nintendo really did care about battery life and cared about the quality of its product. And wanted, you know, to protect its brand
as much as a multinational corporation can care about,
right? But I mean, you know, they were worried about the bottom line, but I really do believe they're also, you know, concerned about image, and it just didn't look good for this handheld system to like be a huge power drain with like six AA batteries, and you know the Game Boy. The original one anyway used four, and then you get the Game Boy Color when it finally came out. Not only did it have color, not backlit, of course, because
that would have taken a lot of battery life.
That only used two. So you know they were really focusing on making the user experience as nice as possible, which is
What happened to that Nintendo? If you're listening right now, why do I have to charge my 3DS every day or a couple times a day?
Oh, really? Well, I'm used to charging my smartphone that often, so I'm not too worried about that. But it's true. Like the SP and the DS, you didn't have to charge them very often at all. That's very true.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it is a much more powerful system. But so I guess that's what we're into next is the DS. The DS is the first one to really. I mean, there'd been touchscreen systems before, but I think the DS is the first one that could be successful. Now, was it successful because it was a touchscreen system, or was it successful because Mario was on it? Is something that will be, you know, debated for a while.
Well, I didn't play a lot of Mario. I can't think of a single Mario game I played on my DS. To be honest, I played Elite Beat Agents, and before that, Owen Dunn.
Yeah,
and then after that, Owen Dunn too.
Like, now you're picking out a perfect example of a game that used the touchscreen well, I think.
Yeah.
I hope so. For those who aren't familiar with these games, can you talk a little bit about how it's played?
Yeah, they're music rhythm games. The Owen Dunn was the original Japanese version. The full name being Os Tatakai Owen Dunn, which is just like how would you translate that exactly?
Os is just like it's like a guttural noise that's like os or whatever,
Tatakai is like fight.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
Os, oh gosh, how would you even?
I don't know, but they were. They're
I translate
male.
It in English as whoa.
Yeah, fight
doesn't make any sense.
Cheerleaders, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
They're like a male cheering squad, right?
Trench-coated male cheerleaders,
So they were badass cheerleaders, but they were still basically cheerleaders. And there were actual, you know, proper female pom-pom cheerleaders in the game as well.
Spoilers!
Oh, come on.
All right, yeah.
That game's been out for a while. I think at this point it's safe to say. That's something to strive for as opposed to, you know, hide from people. Maybe they'll find out about the girls in the game.
Wow, but, you just described my high school life.
Oh, no.
Strive towards the cheerleaders, but it's really difficult. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But you eventually get there if you persevere hard enough, right, geeks?
And much like my actual experience with cheerleaders, I never got there.
Oh, no.
But
you play this game, and there are you know, on the touch screen on the bottom part, there are these, you know, sort of, you know, buttons and tracks. On the top. You see, basically like a manga, like a sort of, active, you know, like those like action motion comics that they have nowadays, sort of like explaining the story that goes along with the song. And then like
bizarre
on the touchscreen
story,
like, I'm thinking of Leap Beat Agents actually, but you know, it was the same style except for with American music, where it's like the very first level is like a babysitter. Invites like over her like football boyfriend to make out, but then like the baby's crying, they gotta take care of him. So it's like babies like footballs. I'm gonna throw this baby at you, and we can change the diaper faster. Yay! And so every time you succeed in the tapping, you know, something wonderful happens, and you get like a nice big circle around it. Or if you fail, then you get like a big X, And then, you know, your Owen Don begin to lose heart. And the worse you do, the less they are inclined to cheer you on. But the actual, like, gameplay is there's like a button that's numbered, like a kind of a ring coming around it, like, and then it just hits the rim of that button in time with the music. And so that lets you know when you're supposed to hit it. So, you know, compare this to games like DDR, where, you know, the more precise you are with your timing, the better the score you get.
Yeah.
And the better it's rated. So you have a pretty good idea of how well you're doing as you go along. And, you know, to get really high scores in a game like this, you have to be pretty spot on. And then, you know, they bring in, like, you know, actually dragging the stylus around, like, a track with, like, a rolling ball kind of thing. So, you know, it's something you play over and over again to get really, really good, and then do the unlocks, like getting to the cheerleaders and such.
Yeah.
And so I played all three iterations of this game across both sides of the Pacific, and it was, I think, my most enjoyable 3DS experience. Sorry, DS experience.
And, I mean, I that's one of my favorite DS games, too. And that is a game that couldn't have been done on anything but a system with a touchscreen. But would you say that most of your favorite DS games were touchscreen games, or ones that went away from that?
Oh, man, that's a really good question. I'm trying to remember my library right now, which I wish I could look it up, but I still don't know what happened to my DS. So,
oh,
yeah. Actually, I could probably just, like, look at my stack of empty cases and tell you. The Mario Kart game was pretty good, partly because it was online. But yeah, that didn't really require the touchscreen at all.
Not really.
I played New Super Mario Brothers, and it had tapping to, like, you know, use your power-ups and stuff, and mostly it was like a Mario game.
But, yeah, it didn't seem like it was necessary, though.
So I guess, yeah, I did play a Mario game on my DS now. fine. But,
Phoenix Wright?
No, didn't play Phoenix Wright. I didn't own it, I should say.
So
I didn't play a lot of it.
Have you played it now?
No.
Oh.
with what DS?
I'm gonna gift it to you on the iPhone.
Sweet.
Okay, just because you need to play it that much, that the fact that you don't have it is worth money to me to correct.
Oh my goodness. Okay, before anyone else gets excited, they probably won't do this for everyone. So
I will not
don't
do this
be,
for anybody
don't be emailing
else. In
him
fact,
asking.
In fact, I may not even do this for Sean.
It's
see.
True.
No, we'll see. We'll see.
It's true. yeah, I'm actually kind of coming up empty. I did play Metroid Prime Hunters, and honestly, the mechanic wasn't so great. I mean, the game wasn't so great to begin with, and it was because it was like a takeoff of the multiplayer aspect of Metroid Prime 2, which I didn't think was that great either. And it was like more of that, except, you know, with N64 graphics instead of GameCube ones. And it's just like, okay, well, that's cool and all, but at least it was an online game also, and that was, like, one of the first ones that came out. And, you know, we were able to show that that DS transfer trick to get your identity moved from one DS to another, because that was around the time that the Lite came out.
Yeah,
supersede the DS Fat.
So you did own a DS Fat.
Oh, I still do, I suppose.
Do you remember? And is it still on yours? They had a strap that came with it with the thumbstick.
Oh, actually, yeah, I did transfer that to my Lite, so it's gone now.
but the concept of that was that you'd wrap that around your thumb, and you'd use it to as a surface, kind of like a thumb stylus for the DS,
right.
And you were supposed to use that for games like Hunters or, you know, any third-person shooter.
Yeah, but
nobody did. Nobody used it. So when the DS Lite came out, they didn't even have it.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I transferred it. Well, I just liked the weight, you know, because it kept the strap out of the way at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, you're totally right. And I think part of the reason is because much like we'll discuss later with the iPhone games, your thumb just gets in the way of what's happening, especially with, you know, games that put the action, you know, on the touch screen, which is generally not helpful. So I guess it's less of a problem then, because, you know, they had the option of having the second screen that was unobstructed. Yeah. But for the most part, like, especially if you're playing something like Owen Don, like, just the skinny little stylus almost got in the way of the gameplay. And if you're left-handed, you were kind of at a disadvantage. And I think you could switch it to a left-handed mode for Owen Don.
For a lot of games you could.
But yeah, like, the possibility of your hand obscuring the action was very real, and so I think that's part of the reason I can't think of a lot of games that utilized it well.
I really think that DS had a good idea, because you had physical buttons and you had a touch screen, and very few games used only one.
Right.
And it was a good mix for most of it. Some of them I didn't understand. Like, there were standard 2D shooters that there were extra buttons available, but they had you do touchscreen things to change guns or something. You know, just unnecessary. Just like, oh, there's this new tech, we need to use it. Or games that, like, use the microphone for no reason.
Yeah.
Blue. Yeah, well, if you want extra power, yell into this at this time. Oh, no, it's the Famicom controller all over again.
If you want to blow out these candles, just... very gently.
Indeed. So, okay. Nintendo DS, first really successful implementation of it in a gaming device.
Definitely.
Then we get the iPhone, which came out not as a gaming device, but has become one. Like, remember for the first year of an iPhone that had no installable apps?
Actually, I don't, because I...
didn't care.
Didn't have an iPhone until this year. So it's 2011, yep. So it's only been out in Verizon for about 8 months.
I've only had my iPhone for less than 2 years. But yeah, when it first came out, it had like web apps. Like you could go to like websites and things coded in HTML5. You know, you could play games, but like it didn't have downloadable apps until it was 1 year into it, which seems crazy now.
Yeah.
Because the iPhone without apps to me just doesn't even make sense.
Well, because, I mean, at the time, right? You know, it was more about being a phone and less of being like a virtual computer in your pocket. And I don't know if they were just like really trying to get to market fast before anyone else stole their thunder, or if it really just didn't occur to them until a year on. I can't believe that they could have gotten anything up and running that fast in just a year. So they must have meant to do it eventually.
I'm guessing it was a timed rollout, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then once the iPhone got apps, like, it just exploded in popularity. I mean, it was already popular, but I mean it just exploded after that. And then of course the Androids and the, you know. Yep. 'Cause I mean there were smartphones before the iPhone.
Right.
And they had apps. I mean, like, as I told you, I had a Palm, and there were apps, but they were expensive and they were hard to implement, and often the only way to unlock them was to, like, send money directly to the publisher, and they sent you, like, a code, and the piracy was bad, so, like, very few people actually bought apps, and it didn't make sense if you were making public domain apps and you wanted to give them away, that made sense. But like to actually sell anything on it, just there was no way to do it. And now we have iPhone and we have Android and let's see, I guess the BlackBerry has its own flavor of touchscreen stuff. Windows phones.
Because before the iPhone came along, BlackBerry was the thing.
Yep, and I don't know. It had that really nice physical keyboard, which I think would be great for writing an email, but it probably didn't really enhance its game playing ability as much. Unless it came with a really, really tiny mouse too, and you could play a Quake.
Oh dear. No, well, like, you know, the BlackBerry being popular made a lot of sense, you know, in the world where like PDAs were the predecessor.
Exactly.
And the power of the iPhone being more of a virtual machine, is that virtual machines can emulate anything, including a PDA. So when you have something that maybe doesn't do some things as well as a dedicated device, but does it good enough for most people, that's when your dedicated device kind of goes by the wayside, which is why people are, you know, like saying that that's why Nintendo should get out of, you know, the business of making handhelds altogether when the sales of the 3DS were not doing so well. However, we just learned, I think it was just this last week, that 3DS sales are set to outpace the first year of DS sales. So
that's good.
Yeah.
It
just needed that price cut, basically.
And no competition from Sony. And, oh, sorry.
Yeah. Ooh, there is that. Things might change in 2012. But I think you found a little news article that might give Nintendo and Sony cause to worry anyway.
Yeah, I found an article that was put out by the analytics firm Flurry, and in 2009, iOS plus Android, these are, you know, the two big players. Sure. and really the only ones we can track, but they made up 19%. Of the U.S. portable game software by revenue.
Respectable.
Okay. That's very good. It was more than the PSP, which was only 11% that year.
Oh, no.
this is the U.S., of course. If we showed this for Japan, it would be quite different.
Okay.
Because iPhone was pretty new there at the time, because they didn't get the iPhone until the 3G models.
And there's a lot of mobile phone gaming that just didn't exist in the U.S. market already.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean... but still, 70% of the market at that time was Nintendo DS for portable game sales.
Sure.
Fast forward to 2011, where we are right now, you know, there's still the Christmas season coming up, and that might change things a little bit. But now Nintendo DS has shrunk down to 36%.
Yeah, it's pretty startling. Like, they've gone up by about 20% a year, 25.
That's almost half. You know,
I'm gonna guess, you know, without knowing the exact numbers, that the overall volume is up, so the pie is bigger in each of these cases.
I'm really hoping so. Yeah,
but still, I'm pretty certain that the overall share really is decreasing. Just maybe not by quite as much. Maybe it's only like they're down to only like 40% or something. But that's still down from 70, which is like almost half.
Yep. And PSP, surprisingly, PSP still has 6%. I thought it was lower.
We could do a whole show about this subject, couldn't we? Especially as it ties into the TGS keynote.
You know what? I think we should. Are you free to do a show about this stuff?
Sure.
Okay. Well, then I won't talk anything more about this. We'll go right into that. But anyway, back to touchscreens.
Yes.
That is all that the iPhone has.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It has one button. And it brings you back home.
Well, other than four.
That, there's but you're not gonna. At least I have not found a way to control Pac-Man with my volume slider.
That's true.
You know what I was thinking the other day? I was thinking if they could make a USB paddle controller, I would love to play Pangle like that on the computer. Ask me how I feel about touchscreen games.
You must love them, right?
It's a love-hate relationship.
Oh no.
Some games that are made for it and certain genres, I love. I love on touchscreen devices. Recently, I was playing. Are you familiar with Broken Sword?
No, not the right game. Whatever the case is, I'm sure of it.
Well, you know Watchmen, the comic.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course.
Okay, is Dave Gibbons artist? Is that?
That sounds right.
I really hope I'm right. I don't know anything about comic books, but he made some press a couple of years ago because he made a Wii version of this old adventure game. This game came out in 1994, I think, by Revolution Software called Broken Sword. It's a point and click 'em up.
All right.
As Strong Bad would say, but point and click adventure game in the similar vein to like Monkey Island.
Sure.
Type games, And it was really good, kind of a murder mystery set in France. Really, really interesting. And they did a remake of it with higher resolution graphics and stuff. And they got the Watchmen guy to redo a lot of the art.
Nice.
And it came out on Wii, and it didn't sell very well. It came out on Wii and DS. It got good reviews because it was a much loved game in adventure game circles. But I think that leads you to realize how small adventure game circles actually are.
Oh, no.
So like. The entire adventure game community went out and picked it up on day one, selling tens and tens of copies.
Oh, dear.
No, but I love adventure games. So I picked it up on the Wii, and I didn't really play it on the Wii.
Okay.
But I was able to get it for about $5 on my my iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful to play on the iPad. I'm guessing it would be good to play on an iPhone as well. But with a game like that, you know, you want the larger screen.
Sure. Right.
So like I'd want to play it on either a computer or the Wii is a good I haven't really gotten around to the Wii version, but I'm guessing that would be really good too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I played the Sam and Max series on the Wii, and I that was good.
Right.
The Wii pointer is a good way to control adventure games.
Yeah, the you know, it occurs to me, like, you know, the mouse, as it exists, was just a way to sort of be able to mimic using your own finger.
Exactly.
In lieu of actually being able to use a touchscreen, now that those things exist, you don't need mice anymore, and you can do a lot, you know, with the multi-touch especially, can do a lot more interesting things. So, like, the idea of playing that or the Back to the Future games on a Wii, where you have, you know, a kind of middle ground touch/mouse interface, it's just perfect for adventure games that are point and click in style.
I think so too. I think so too. So that game works well. Peggle works well. Tower defense games work well. Mm. Or probably the one you're more familiar with. This is a plant defense from Plants vs. Zombies. So
right.
I don't know what other games work well.
That's a great question, because there are a lot of games I feel don't work well. Anything with virtual controls can be kind of hit or miss, because, you know, it's trying to emulate the directional pad and buttons, and so you either have fewer buttons to deal with, and or your thumbs are obscuring the action on the screen, which isn't great. So like that Street Fighter 4 Volt thing that came out recently, or the Streets of Rage 2, I think those are good examples. Those are the hits. It takes a little getting used to not having the tactile feedback of knowing where your positioning is at all times.
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of look at what you're doing, which, you know, on a regular controller, you don't, if you're any good anyway, you don't look at your thumbs. So,
yeah. You get used to it as you go along, but yeah.
Yeah. So, for the most part, anything trying to emulate what you can do on a console, I don't really feel does it justice. So, something like Angry Birds, perfect example of you know, something that was designed for a touch interface from the ground up.
Have you played any first-person shooters?
I tried, and we saw this as one of the games that Gameloft had at Tokyo Game Show. I tried the free demo for Nova 2. Which, okay. Oh man, it's trying so hard to be Halo. Like, even with, like, the atmospheric reentry without a spaceship thing. Like, spoilers for Halo 3, by the way. Oh. Yeah, so the virtual, like, walking stick isn't so bad. It's the fact that you have to use your aim thumb like a mouse, kind of. And then take your thumb off that to shoot.
That's convoluted.
I tried using the gyroscope version, but it doesn't tilt so much as senses lateral motion. So you can kind of use your iPhone or, I guess, iPad as a window into the gaming universe, which is a kind of cool idea, but it wasn't really built for that necessarily. And trying to move at the same time is a little difficult, but at least it frees up your thumb to shoot. So I have a feeling like if I play around that a little bit more, I'd get used to it and be able to.
I would think so, but But I wonder if it, you know, it's clearly not a genre that was made for this type of feedback.
Yeah.
Puzzle games work, card games work, most casual games work very well with a touchscreen, but action games, I don't know. You've played Infinity Blade, right?
No. I've heard a lot about it and seen it, but I haven't tried to do it myself. I've played Sword and Sorcery, the hipster adventure game.
You need to play Infinity Blade. Well, have you played Dragon Quest Swords on the Wii?
No.
Or seen it? You're familiar with it, though.
Actually, I'm not.
Okay, it's a Dragon Quest game that's not really an RPG because it's very much on rails. Slimes come out at you and stuff, and you slash with the remote, which looks really silly, but kind of fun. It's basically an updated Wii version of a game called Kenshin Dragon Quest.
Okay.
And, which was a standalone thing that they released. And, I don't know, you slash at things, and that's what you do in Infinity Blade, too. But slashing with your finger versus flailing at the television...
Sure.
...feels a lot more mature.
Yeah.
It's a good game. But no, seriously, you should play Infinity Blade, because I want to talk about Infinity Blade. We've talked about it before when we were talking about the games with lives thing.
Yeah. So the concept sounds interesting to me, but like I don't know if I want to play a game where I know I'm going to fail the first time I try and go through it.
Well, that's every game for me. So.
Well, I mean, it's just like suspecting you might fail and having to try over again versus like, you know, game all the way through. And it's like, well, thou art dead and start over from the beginning.
And now the big question.
Sure.
I mean, the really big question is Nintendo going the right way with this new controller?
Oh, the Wii U?
Because, I mean, what is that? That's kind of like a smaller iPad without multi-touch. Multi-touch, by the way, is the ability for the touchpad to register more than one point of touch, you know?
I don't know if it needs multi-touch. I'm certain that it's cheaper to mass produce these than it is the iPhone. I mean, you know, this is like a multi-hundred-dollar device we're talking about versus like a console that might be $250 or $300 when it comes out.
We hope.
We hope. We hope is what it should be called instead of Wii U. We hope.
We hope this sells. Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, you know, the regular controls are still on there. So, if anything else, you know, it's more like a 3DS or a DS, I suppose, depending on you know, I guess if it supports a 3D television or not, with you know a large, enormous second screen than anything else.
I can see it having some good ideas. I like that the demo that they saw where you held it up to the screen and it was kind of like an AR type thing, but the touch screen stuff, I'm not sure how that would work because. With a device like an iPad, your entire gaming experience is what's on that screen.
Right.
But with the Wii U, it's what's on that screen plus what's on, well, if for most games at least, what's also on the main screen. So I just don't know how touch works in that way. It sounds more like a trackpad for a laptop than it sounds, you know.
And the thing is because it's 100% backwards compatible with or at least with the Wii Motion Plus stuff. I'm not sure if it's going to require the Motion Plus to use the Wii controls or not.
I would guess it would be built into the... Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because you can use your old Wii stuff with the Wii U. It'll be interesting to see like what games even decide to make use of the unique features that are going to be on the Wii U pad or if it's just going to go you know, with the potentially larger install base of having the Wiimote stuff.
Well, do you think that the Wii U is going to create any competition to the iPad?
No.
I don't see it either. Like, because that's what I was telling myself, and that's how we started this episode with me thinking I'd hold off because the Wii U controller, it's basically going to be an iPad. No, it's not.
No, it really won't.
It won't work if you move any space away from your system, you know. Mm. It may have some iPad-like features, but it's really not. It's apples and oranges. It's apples and Nintendo's.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah, it can't do any of its own processing. It needs everything streamed to it from, you know, the Wii U, which has the processor and GPU and everything on it. Yep. So, yeah.
So... tell me about your weekend.
My weekend? Oh, yeah. So I didn't mention it beforehand, but I went to Daishokan, as I do every year. I think this is its fourth year now. I usually have a panel there, and I submitted mine a bit late. They had a little kerfuffle, actually. Their hotel closed down right out from under them. Like, you know, the hotel and the Tilted Kilt next to it, which for those who haven't been to Tilted Kilt, it's like Hooters for midriffs. It's just like women dressed in sort of supposedly Scottish garb, you know, pleated skirts instead of kilts, and not much else. But anyway, so that and the attached hotel went under, and they had to move it almost an hour away. So they got a new hotel and everything. But in the middle of that, I had submitted a panel request, and they didn't ever confirm it with me. So I assumed I wasn't going to have one. But I get there on Friday, and lo and behold, I have a panel. So I go up to the guys, and they're working there pretty well. And I'm like, so I have a panel. They're like, yeah. And I was like, no one told me. Oh, well, we should have words with that guy. Yeah.
Did you have a panel?
Yeah. I ended up doing it. You know, fortunately, the move to the new hotel was actually pretty close to home, so I could have gone home to prepare some things, but it wouldn't have been very good. So I made sure I had like internet connection. I had enough hookups for my laptop to stream stuff off the internet, basically. So I went to my YouTube channel, lined up a bunch of things to watch, threw in some filler that I couldn't do because like most of my shtick is online. Already in some fashion, like the Minus World stuff, and our Pole's voice trick is in episode 5 of the first season.
Yeah.
So I was able to show some of that stuff off. But I did some other stuff like I love Dragon Age, so I found this hilarious, I think, video based on kind of Rage comics about Fenris. If you know Lonely Island at all, they did a cover of Throw It to the Ground. And it's really funny because they actually like.
I think you linked that to one of our.
Oh, I did. I did like one of the earlier podcasts.
Totally don't get it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's totally above my head. But
we had some walkouts after that. Yeah. But yeah, so it went pretty well. I thought, given that it was sort of off the cuff like that.
Yeah.
And but that's also where I introduced something new that we're doing. We actually have a survey right now. So if you go to the website, FamicomDojoTV/survey, or, you know, I'm sure there'll be a link in the show notes for it as well. We want your feedback about what you would love to see in a game store, like a used game store, or like a game center type thing. If you like wanted to play games or like a way to import games, stuff like that. Like where would you like to hang out as a gamer kind of thing? If you go there now, there's only like about a dozen and a half questions or so, I want to say. That's like 22, right? What's a dozen? It's 18. That's like 20 questions. So, shush.
Baker's dozen.
we would love everyone's feedback, but also if you participate, we're giving away a free DVD every week.
Wow.
Yeah.
What DVD?
Why not? Our DVD, of course, the season one of Famicom Dojo.
I already have one.
I know. Well, if you get one, guess what? It's close to the holidays. You can give it to a friend, to your parents, it to yourself.
What I got, you got to give it. Oops, sorry.
So, little enticement there, I think. We'll announce every week on the show who the winners are and everything. So a good reason to listen to the podcast every week as well.
Well, I mean, beyond the fact that it's always good to listen to the podcast.
And it's amazing in its own right.
All right. And, just as always, stop by, leave a comment. And if you could, tell us what you think, this, touchscreen gaming.
Yes.
Your experiences with it. Whether you think it's the future or if it's just a gimmick, it seems to have proven itself fairly well for mobile phones and devices like that. But is it going to hit the console realm as well as it's hit portables? I think is the main question that Nintendo's sweating about right now.
Yeah, well, if you looked at the numbers for the release of Modern Warfare 3, maybe not so much. But yeah. Please leave your feedback, FamicomDojo Famicom.tv, or we're on Twitter, Famicom Dojo, Facebook, Famicom Dojo. Also leave a comment on our iTunes storefront. Rate us. And the more people who do that, the more visibility we have and more people can listen to our awesome show.
Stand on the top of large buildings and scream the name Famicom Dojo into the night.
And we shall appear.
we found might actually work as a kind of a low-tech solution to it. So if you have an interesting story with that, let us know.
if you're any of these Occupy protests, just do a mic check for Famicom Dojo. Thanks.
I hope the wiggling fingers are up. I really hope our wiggling fingers are up.